Welcome, everyone. This is Big Steel, the Urban Gardener, and today I have with me Tim Box Tebow, and we have our first guest, Erica, from Gardening Under the Influence. And today's topic is going to be about, were cannabis laws purposely put in place to hurt minorities? So, Erica, you know, you're the subject matter expert on this, so tell us, you know, your opinion on this subject.
It was completely a racist move. It's been like that since the 1800s. Back in the 1800s, there wasn't any recreational use really going on in marijuana. But in the late 1800s, Mexican immigrants started coming to America out of racial injustice of their own country and political unrest. And that's when they started noticing that they used it recreationally. And as it kept going, they tied that to people being drunk, getting crazy, raping. And for Blacks, they associated it with, if they smoke weed, then Black people will forget their place and think they're equals to white people. So you can't tell me it wasn't racist. It started off racist from the get-go. They even changed the name to marijuana so that it would sound bad compared for and associated with Mexicans versus cannabis, which is what U.S. was calling it before then.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, it's racism all over this thing, from that, even trying to get into the industry as a Black person is ridiculous. I've had some experience with this stuff, even with trying to get a hemp cultivation license. I had a hard time with getting it because, you know, I was Black. And hemp doesn't, you know, hemp isn't pulling in the type of money that cannabis is pulling in. And, you know, I still, you know, was, you know, slighted in a way. And getting my license, you know, I had to, you know, read stuff, research stuff, and find out stuff on my own to get my hemp cultivation license. And, you know, I don't know about you, Tim. Have you experienced racism in the cannabis world? Because you're more into cannabis than I am.
Yeah. So, a lot of the, like in Missouri, for example, going after licensing, they a lot of the different laws and stipulations to actually get licensed, it's kind of astronomical. Like, you have to have 1.5 million in liquid assets, so cash. Not many people have $1.5 million in cash, you know, just sitting around. Oh, I got that. You know, it's in the cupboard, you know? So having the ask, for that, that just made it super challenging for just anybody, but especially Black people, just because, with how we're paid and compensated at these different jobs and so forth compared to our white counterparts. So for the mix, it's so much more difficult to even get involved. And then just like the punishments for a Black person to having cannabis legally or illegally, compared to our white counterparts getting a slap on the wrist where we're getting capital punishment, you know, it's a little strange. You would think we're still in the 1800s, but it's 2021.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just, you know, went from the white sheets to the executive seat. They control, you know, control everything, control a whole lot. That's all they did. Took off the white sheets and, you know, went to the executive seat to make, yeah, we're not going to let them in. We can come in first. We're going to make all the money first. Then we're going to let everybody else in. You know,
So, Erica, I have a question, since you being the expert in this matter. What do you think, how do you think the federal prohibition affected the Black community after it took effect in 1937?
First, they taxed it. Like, it first was a tax, but up until the war on drugs, it wasn't an actual crime. When they put it to that Schedule One level with Nixon is when it really got bad. But it affected us in small ways, because even back then we were the number one people they were targeting, and as well as Mexicans. Even back then it was what, like 9 times likely for them to catch a Mexican with marijuana. So it was always set up to see us fail. And that's the same thing. I work HR. Most drugs don't stay in your system but a day or two. Ecstasy, all the rest of those as far as drug screens. But marijuana attacks to your fat cells. The top people smoking marijuana are people of color across this country. And so that also alienates us from getting better paying jobs and all. So between being tied up in the law system for fines and then not being able to get better opportunities, you've blocked us out on every level. So definitely, it did alienate more Black people and make us more of a target. Like right now, 40% of Black people are in jail for charges of drugs, but we're only 13% of the population. Explain that. It doesn't match.
Don't add up at all. But I mean, do you see any changes? Like, do you think the field will be even for everybody to get in?
The field will never be even for everybody to get in. That is not America's way. This is a consumer thing. And the biggest people making all the money are, like you said, 1.5 million. They're white. They're not of our background for the most part. And when we do hear about a line, it's usually more of a licensing partnership than an actual, they own the whole dispensary and the growing system. So there's places where you might be able to level it a little, but in general, I don't see that happening no time soon.
What do you think about federal legalization? They've been talking about it in the recent news about it becoming legal federally. What do you think about it?
If it could become legal federally, that'd be great. But I doubt it. I just don't see that happening no time soon. I know what Biden told everybody and it sounded good. And then he got in the White House and fired everybody who said they ever smoke weed. Mm. So that your walk and your talk don't sound the same. And I really think there's some backdoor stuff going on between the two parties. And so that's why they've backed down from talking of that. Because I don't see how marijuana is a federally illegal substance yet. It was considered an essential need during the pandemic and allowed to stay open when everything else shut down. Either it's illegal or it's not.
Mm. Word.
Definitely. Mm.
So what do you think? What do you think? How are some ways that we can level the playing field? What do you think?
Me?
Go ahead.
Well, I'll go ahead. Well, I think I think it all starts with local politics, you know, getting the right people to go. But, you know, that comes with, you know, all us, you know, getting into the local politics and putting people in place to go to Washington to fight to make the playing field even. I mean, that's how I look at it. But, you know, a lot of us are still walking around blind. You know, they don't see that. Like, the only way to win, because if you look at all the minorities that's here, they come together, they in local politics, and they send people to Washington. You know, well, that's my spiel on it.
Yeah.
I think with it becoming federal, if it does, I can see a lot of benefit. Like one with transporting, I'm seeing a huge boom in Black-owned trucking companies so they can transport cannabis throughout the U.S. And like getting the ancillary money, you may not, even if you're not in the actual, like doing plant touching where you are a cultivation facility, or even if you can control the whole supply chain, even just having a bigger chunk of the pieces that are available, you know, which are like ancillary businesses, heating and cooling, trucking, security companies.
I mean, mess and soil. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those things definitely. Facility design and so forth. But also, I see like with it becoming legal federally, I see a lot more people because it's already starting now where they're taking advantage of what local things are available to them. So like caregiver programs where you can be a caregiver, you have X amount of plants and so forth. So you may not be on a commercial scale where you're making the tens of millions of dollars, or, you know, however many millions and even billions, but you still make, you know, you're making some money and you're making an impact. To your point, Sonny, about winning locally. So,
yeah, definitely, man.
Agree. And I do think it will have to be on the local level, which is why some of the states have went around the federal laws.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think the one thing that stops weed from being legalized, there's two things. The military, how do you make it federally illegal and still tell the military soldiers they can't use it? That's one.
Yeah.
Two is, how do you test? Now, when I was in Washington, we lived in the PNW for a while. They had started finding some tests in Oregon and Washington that they could test to see if you were under the influence on the road. But most people don't carry it, and most states don't know anything about that. So unlike a DUI where you are, you can test for alcohol, at this point they can't test for marijuana and the likes. They can just say, oh, I smelt something suspicious, which is also some racist stuff, because who's to say what you were smelling?
That's true.
Yeah. It's like in most states, just the smell of it is not probable cause.
Right.
So.
But we have to teach people that part too. We're going to have to show all levels of it and what the real knowledge of it is so that they're protected. I don't know. It's going to come. I have no doubt it will come. I just see the Zoomers, the centennial generation, getting it passed federally and not us.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it also comes down to like us voting. It's so many black people, which is
yeah, I'm guilty of it. I didn't vote.
Like, I mean, yeah, you like, and not saying that all, like, the only thing you do is vote. Of course, you know, make other impact, because even though you said you didn't vote, like you going out in the community, you got community gardens and so forth. Like you're making a local impact, you know. But also extend that extra, like, which is voting, because it affects the local, state, and federal. You know, like this funding that you can be getting and like different things that you could be getting and that you're missing out on.
And definitely.
I also think it's interesting that they make it so, like, if you become a felon, you can't vote.
Yeah, that's garbage.
That's, yeah, state by state, they have different rules, but definitely it's garbage all the way around.
I don't know. They make all of these different things. They just try to hide it so you can't see what's going on. But, I mean, one thing I can definitely say about black people, we super resilient. We'll make some shake.
right.
We got three examples on the call right now. You know,
definitely.
Do y'all think that if they do go ahead and legalize it federally across the board, that every person that has went to jail and that's currently still in jail for cannabis, should they get some type of reparation, or should they, you know, get released with records expunged and all of that shit that happened?
I don't honestly think that they deserve reparations, because it still was at that time a law on the books, and they knowingly broke that law. We all have knowingly broken certain laws, and if the speed limit is repealed from 55 to 75 next year, that doesn't mean my ticket is not valid anymore because they boosted it. But I definitely do think that it should be expunged or removed from their record, because it's no longer holding that same weight and you're hindering them from getting certain jobs and all.
I think I agree and disagree with what you said, Erica. I think part of the reason why I'm disagreeing is because while they're in jail, they were working, like, making basically nothing. Whereas if they were out here, they could have been making astronomical amounts more. And so, like, and then when they get out of jail, they don't have any bearings to, like, really go forward. It's like they have to start from square one oftentimes.
Right.
And so because of that, I think they should get some type of reparation, some type of stipend, some type of monetary benefit. along with the record being expunged and so forth. It's like, bruh, I didn't do anything wrong. I just got a plant on me, you know? And I'm having to be in here with people that's serial killers and everything else.
Yeah, because that goes... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because, you know, I issued food stamps for a while, and it irks me, y'all. You can have any charge and still receive food stamps. You come in and you tell me, well, I was just released from jail. My next question has to be, well, what did you do? I murdered somebody. Okay, here's your application. Oh, I stabbed somebody. A drunk driver. Here's your application. I sold weed. I'm sorry, you don't qualify for food stamps ever again in life.
Wow. I didn't know that at all.
You know how to, you know, I'd be like, oh, he just murdered somebody. I was so annoyed. Because the USDA backs covers food stamps. The SNAP benefit is USDA and doesn't have nothing to do with cocaine and nothing else. It's only marijuana. Think about it. It's the same thing for your student loans. You couldn't get your Pell Grant. Obama repealed that and gave you the two strikes. Well, the first time you have to be good for 2 years or a year, and then you get a second chance. After 2 years out, there was no way around him getting it where it was nothing. So he did help a little, but it definitely was not enough in that instance. But yeah, if you sold weed, you cannot get food stamps or any of those benefits. You are disqualified for life. That's bogus.
Wow. It is.
Yeah. And you know, you see who's the main ones who do that. So, you know, like, I could talk about this all day, the stuff I've seen with it, because that just blows my mind every time.
I got another question. So with the Constitution and everything, because, you know, I feel like the Constitution needs to be rewritten because it was not written for people of color. How do y'all feel about that? Do y'all think it should be rewritten also?
No. I don't think the Constitution needs to be rewritten. I just think that the two amendments that were passed that made us equals should be enforced. And they're not enforced. And that's the problem, because the Constitution has made it a level playing field. It's just that it's not being enforced or applied, and there's no means test to prove it.
I feel that. And what's like to your point about it needing to be reinforced and so forth, like you can see how it's not being enforced.
Yes.
Like a black person getting pulled over and so forth. And now we got to get gunned down. And we complying. Like you're saying, oh, you need to just shut up and comply. We complying. I'm going on my jog. You know, I'm getting gunned down because I'm running. Like, I'm literally just out jogging. Mm-hmm. What we doing? We got to get shot down.
Yep.
White person, they could literally put their hands on a police officer.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true.
Oh, let me take you to go get you a hamburger. You've been working today.
Oh, Dylan Roof. Oh, you just murdered all these black people who just prayed for you? It's okay. Let's get you something to eat real fast. Yeah.
Yeah, let's use it.
Gotta be home. Mm-hmm.
And come home, come into the building with no marks on them. that part.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is what it is. Now earlier though, when you guys were saying the local level though, and let me tell you why the voting matters more than anything. In most states, to be in a jury, you have to vote. So if black people are not voting, then we're not on juries. It shows if at least one black person is on the jury, that our chances of not being convicted as black people increases by like 80%.
Mm. Wow.
They want to be alienated. The voting and the restriction of voting, if you're charged or they see it as felon, it's so many other layers to it. It's these other things you get blocked out of. They're stopping your food. They're stopping you from being an equal. They're stopping you from doing your due diligence in your community. It's just so many levels to that one weed charge.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And like with the voting and being on the jury, I didn't even think about that. Like how many people, like don't want to be have to even go to jury duty.
Yeah,
that's and like don't take it serious.
Or they don't want to go at all. They find a way to get out of it. They bring their kids, and I'm like, no, I'm gonna be at every jury they call me for. It's annoying. I'll take my little stipend. But even if they, you know, you still don't even know if you're going to be selected at the end. Yeah. But do your due diligence. Sit there for a day. It's not going to hurt you. You might help somebody in your community who's being disparaged racially, because people who are not, that look like us, that don't look like us, don't know the experience. They don't get to see it firsthand. I got a black son who is a state officer. He is like this superhero kid author, full-time college student at 16. And this summer alone, he's had guns pulled on him, harassed. He's doing nothing but walking down a beach. Like, but other people won't understand that. They won't get that. You must be doing something wrong. Why are you nervous? You wouldn't be nervous if you didn't have anything that. No, I have a distrust.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you for having a distrust.
Yeah.
I was fussing at my son the other day, you know, because he always cutting up. And, you know, the world is not nice to men of our color. You know, we have to be a certain type of way. We got to learn more. We got to be better than everybody and all that stuff. It's a different type of world for us.
You know? And that's draining. How do you
tell it?
Anything he wants to be, he put his mind to, but then say, you can't do what your white friends do.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, Mr. Tim, what's the strain of the day?
The strain of the day is Durban Poison. It is a pure sativa from the South African city of Durban. It's known for its smell, like a sweet smell, I'm sorry, and its energy. It's great for helping to stay productive during those slow days and focus during those super busy days. It's super bomb. If you have not tried it, I highly encourage you to try it. If you have tried it, you know what's up. But yeah, the strain of the day is Durban Poison.
That sounds like a nice one. Erica, what you smoking on?
Pineapple sage.
I'm smoking on runs.
Look, I never smoked weed until I moved to Washington where it was legal. Look, I get away with a lot of stuff as a chocolate girl, so I wasn't pushing it.
Wow.
Being back in the South, I don't touch it.
Okay, the herb, but it's not a herb. It's actually orange peel, right? So orange peels have polyphenols in it, which helps prevent and manage many chronic conditions such as type 2 diabetes, obesity, and Alzheimer's disease.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, and how do you prepare them?
Oh, you prepare them. I take them and make tea with them. I take them and let them dry out and make sure you get organic oranges, or if you can't get organic oranges, let it soak in water for a little bit to get some of those herbicides and pesticides out. You let it soak a little bit, but after that you let it dry out a little, and then you put it in a pot, add your water, and boil. When I do mine with orange peels, ginger, turmeric, and nice. A little bit of black pepper in there. So I make mine. That's like a immunity combination for a lot of stuff. Well, this was a great episode. Well, I thank both of y'all for y'all time and tuning in to the next episode of the Mind Your Herbs podcast. Please go on, give us reviews, subscribe to us, and we look forward to talking to you again. See y'all later.
Y'all have a good one.
Peace.